On December 9th, 2022, and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied the meeting access instructions. Ms. Poe, will you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey? Dr. Catarino?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Good morning, I'm present.
Dr. Medina?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott? Ms. Shreve? Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Mr. Nguyen?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Please note that the times stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to a former agenda item at a later time. The board may also reorder non-timed items. The board encourages everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. You'll find the link on the meeting agenda that is posted on the board's website. I do want to take a moment to recognize all of the board members for your hard work. Each board member spends many hours preparing for each meeting. We appreciate this time and effort. I would also like to acknowledge the efforts of the board staff and our attorney. Another fantastic, exciting, full of fun year and work that you guys have navigated for us beautifully. Thank you so very much for all that you do. It has been truly a pleasure this year, one being as chair, but then having you guys supporting us through this, because this has been a very busy year again, and we wouldn't have been able to do all of it without you. So thank you.
I want to appreciate your job as chair, and Dr. Davey, you both have done a great job.
Thank you, Dr. Catarino. Much appreciated. Attendance of this board meeting is eligible for continuing education credit if it is at least 4 hours long. Should its duration be 4 or more hours, make note of the code words provided throughout the meeting. To report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. It is possible that today's meeting will not be 4 hours in duration, and if that is the case, we do appreciate your understanding. We'll now move to the call to the public. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board will limit the number of persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number on any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02H, the board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. The board members may not discuss the matter with each other or with the member of the public addressing the board. The only option available is to instruct staff to place the topic on a future agenda if it's applicable. If you wish to speak, please unmute your line, state your name, and I will call on you. Hearing none, we will now move to agenda item number 5, board council's update. Ms. Galvin, do you have an update for the board?
Good morning, members of the board. Just for the record, I see that Dr. Davey joined, and so I would make sure that everybody knows he's present. The only update I have relates to agenda item number 8. That matter was set for formal hearing next week, and we do have a consent for surrender, so I can discuss that when we get to agenda item number 8. Other than that, I have no update. Thank you.
Thank you. Agenda item number 6 is the consent agenda. For the record, are there any recusals for the consent agenda?
Madam Chair, this is Mr. Dinar. I'm recused because I did not attend those 2 meetings.
For the minutes?
Yes, just the minutes. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I was just making sure. And then I do note... Oh, but this might be on the script. I don't know if it's on the final agenda, but I can pull it up. But item C, number 12, is its own agenda item, I believe. So that would come off of the consent agenda. Uh, And that's for applicant Elena Callis. Ms. Pacnon, is that showing on the final agenda that you guys posted? I might have a different version.
I think we have, so we have her agenda eyes separately down at number 12, yes.
Yep, okay, then I would just recommend that for the record that be removed from the consent agenda.
Thank you.
And of course I caught that one because that was my one recusal. So or a board member may request to remove an item from the consent agenda for independent discussion and action. Are there any such requests? Hearing none, if there's no request to remove an item, is there a motion to approve the items on the consent agenda?
So moved, Dinar.
Second.
Mr. Dinar, because you're recused from the minutes, may I ask that someone else make the motion?
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. We will now move to agenda item. I don't know why. Moving around here. If we could move to agenda item number 11, it's going to be the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation from the Committee of Behavior Analysts regarding the following license reinstatements. I am the lead for both items 11A and B, so I'll provide a summary for each to the board. For 11A, we have a reinstatement request for Dana Cruz. Ms. Cruz applied for reinstatement after her license expired on October 31st. She noticed by November 10th that she had missed that deadline and license reinstatement request to board staff. Board staff forwarded this to us as Ms. Cruz did acknowledge that she did practice during that time. Ms. Cruz did provide information at that time that she was practicing in a center of which she would have also been supervised. We, as a committee, reviewed the reinstatement request, and we would like to recommend Ms. Cruz for reinstatement, but we have also requested that a future agenda item be added to review the potential non-licensed practice. And that's pretty much the summary. So I move that we approve the reinstatement request.
Second.
Yeah. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I'll just now make the discussion point that we're seeing, you know, as the number of behavior analysts kind of start to increase, we're seeing this kind of increase in this error. We are doing what we can proactively to get to the stakeholders mm-hmm. and the community to raise awareness to attention to these dates. They are not in line with their national certification. They're often flip-flopped in terms of years and timing. And so it's, we may see, I would just say to the board, we may see a few more of these trickle through before we can really solve the problem completely.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Okay, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. We will move to 11B because I'm totally on script today. Sorry. we do have Ms. Domondre is with us today. I'm double checking because I did not see Ms. Cruz, but I also didn't ask. So Ms. Cruz, if you are on a phone line and you have something that you wanted to say, I apologize. I did not mean to overlook that. All right. Hearing none, we'll move to 11B with Amy Salmondre.
It appears Ms. Cruz is present.
Oh. Yeah.
And no further questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cruz. I don't know why I'm not seeing you, but thank you. All right, Ms. Domondre is present, and this, I will provide a summary of 11B. Ms. Domondre's license expired in September of 2022. She did send a reinstatement request in November after she had noticed that the licensure had expired. Similar to Ms. Cruz, Ms. Domondre did report that she had practiced between the October 1st and the November 15th date that the reinstatement request came in, but that as soon as she realized that she did not have a license, that she immediately ceased practice. Ms. Domondre is present, so I don't know if you would like to address the board, but if you would, now would be a good time to do so.
Yeah, just I think along what you know Mr. Davey said, was just an error and misunderstanding of the two different dates, and then also being under a former work email that I left 4 days after licensure. So I would also like to ask if it would be beneficial for me to provide information, as I've always practiced under an LBA for a clinical director my entire time as practicing as a BCBA, and if providing that information and like our meeting summaries and meeting dates and how often I'm under her supervision would be beneficial moving forward with the next meeting as well. I'm happy to provide that information also.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Domondre?
This is Dr. Davey. I would just say whatever information you can provide to the board that helps kind of wrap up the situation would be appreciated for the committee to review prior to making its recommendation to the full board of psychologists.
Absolutely. Is there a date that I would need to submit that all by for you guys to be able to review it?
Board staff will be in contact with you, because what we're going to do right now is we're going to make the motion on your reinstatement with and the same recommendation of adding a future agenda item. The board staff, should that motion go, the board staff will contact you with kind of the deadlines and that information directly.
Perfect. I'm happy to provide that.
Thank you. And thank you both for being here. It's very helpful to have you guys here for questions. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Domondre? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and make the motion that we approve the reinstatement request for Ms. Domondre with the additional component of adding the future agenda item to review the unlicensed practice.
I'll make the second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries, and thank you guys again for being here. It's much appreciated. We will now move to agenda item number 12. I am recused from this item, so Dr. Davey, I will let you take over.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I'll provide a brief summary of the application, and then we'll see if there are any questions. Again, this is one that came in due to recusals on the committee side, and is really nothing too exciting here. We have an individual seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, Elaine Collis. She became a board-certified behavior analyst in September of 2022. She completed her work at the University of Dayton. One thing, I'll just point out to board staff, there's a typo on University of Dayton, not going to hold up the thing, but just with regard to the typo on page 4 of 19 of the application, page 2 of the PDF. She got her master's in applied behavior analysis there. In looking at her experience, she has indicated that she was at Aspen Behavior Consulting as well as ABA Learn to Play for her experience towards her certification and licensure, reviewing the individuals that provided the supervision. All were in good standing with the BACB and including their BACB clearance to supervise. In addition, all held state licensure during their time of which they worked and supervised the applicant. So everything there looks to be in line. And with that, I would move that this be considered to, I guess this will be considered to grant full licensure to the applicant. And I'll go ahead and make that motion.
Second.
Thank you very much. I forget I'm the chair. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Thank you. The motion carries. And with that, I will hand back over this great responsibility to Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Ms. Pakanon, my phone has shut off, so my note on the next agenda item recommendation. Do we have the parties for agenda item number 10 present?
Madam Chair, I do believe that the representatives of ASPA are here. I see several of them, so I'm not sure who will be addressing the board, but just for purposes of teeing this off for you, they've asked for some time on the agenda in order to present some considerable updates with respect to the application for the Sunrise to expand the scope of practice of the practice of psychology to allow qualifying psychologists to have prescriptive authority. And they also have what I understand to be an early working draft of the proposed legislation. And with that, I will cede the floor to the group.
Fantastic. ASPA representatives, do you have somebody that will be speaking?
Good morning. I'm Dr. Jeff Thomas. With me this morning is Dr. Warren Littleford and Stephen Mortel from Lewis and Rocha. Sort of a note of correction. The bill and the plan is not to expand the scope of practice for psychologists. The plan is to create a new license for a new field, a specialty field within psychology for a prescribing psychologist. So the scope of practice for a psychologist license in Arizona will not change. It will create a new category where someone can apply for a license as a prescribing psychologist. And so it will create an additional license, a new license that would be under the board.
Thank you. And we do have the materials. Is there anybody who has any questions for Mr. Thomas Dr. Thomas, Dr. Littlefield, or Mr. Mortel?
I'll start with one question, Madam Chair. Can you talk to us a little bit about your vision, not only as it's described within what will be statute and rule, but within your group, kind of your think tank, if you will, of what this board, or if it's not a board, if it is a committee that then reports back up to the board, like what is your vision of this as you kind of look at different structures within kind of Arizona state board statutes and rules as they stand today?
If I understand your question clearly, what we are thinking is that this practice would be governed by this board, by the Board of Psychologist Examiners. And so much in the same way that when behavior analysts became part of the board, that this board expanded its scope to regulate that profession as well. So this board would expand its scope to regulate prescribing psychologists as well, with the understanding that you know there will be some adjustment period, and there will be a period of time where there are no prescribing psychologists in Arizona. But once that happens, this board would be responsible for regulating that practice.
So do you?
There are five other states that have prescribing psychologists, and they're all under the their respective board of psychologist examiners in each of those five states. So it's going to be similar to that as well.
Okay. So I fully understand that. So having been a part of this board as a non-committee member, as someone who was essentially regulated without representation for a period of time prior to moving towards representation through the formulation of a committee and then also the granting of board seats to be able to fully regulate behavior analysts. I guess, you know, to be more clear, my question, are you going to seek that there's a committee of those that understand what prescribing psychologists, what their scope of practice should be, what their ethics should be, what their best practices should be, assessment, treatment protocol should be? Do we have those individuals that'll help inform the board as we build that up as behavior analysts did, as kind of, I don't even believe we could call ourselves an ad hoc committee, but the board invited Dr. Davis Wilson, myself, Dan Davidson, Dr. Stenhoff, others that have helped inform the committee early on as to our practice and the expectations of said practice. And with, you know, I have somewhat of a, I have a very strong opinion that our ability to be able to speak to the board clearly and often helped alleviate many issues that could have arisen that we've seen arise in other states. We proactively shut those down and have a healthy relationship, whereas today we do have representation, not only through a committee, but through board membership. And so I guess I'm just kind of wanting for you all to kind of consider that path of today, what it looks like in terms of your mind, and then the realities of what it's going to take over the next 5 to 10 years to really ramp up expertise and just the bandwidth to be able to understand the practices that a prescribing psychologist would be engaged in. Because as it stands today, I don't believe we have a psychologist that, you know, obviously we don't have psychologists in Arizona that prescribe, but I'm not sure that we have those online that are currently on the board that are seeking that path. Maybe there are, and that would help us. But just as we think this through, I'd like you all to be thinking that through as you move forward, having gone through this process previously.
Well, the short answer to your question is yes. All right. And there are psychologists who have licensures as nurse practitioners. And so they're dually licensed. And we'd be able to tap into their expertise as we ramp up this process over the next few years.
There are also psychologists that have completed the training to be a prescribing psychologist, but are not licensed in this state because we don't offer that. There are also prescribing psychologists in Arizona that work in the federal government. So we have prescribing psychologists that work in Indian Health Service. There are also prescribing psychologists that work in the Department of Defense. So so the expertise is here in the state, and it would just be a question of tapping into those. I think the idea of a committee and kind of following what's worked for this board in the past is the wise path forward if this becomes law.
And is it your estimation that you have, and I'll say this will be my final question, Madam Chair, is it your estimation that you have individuals that have that expertise that are willing to quite honestly volunteer their time and expertise to be a part of these meetings, to be a part of discussions around statutes and rules and regulations as they work their way through the system?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there additional questions? Sorry, Mr. Diner.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Dr. Thomas, Dr. Little for being here, and Mr. Mutal as well. My questions are basically about, you know, what's the next step? I mean, we saw the model legislation that you provided to the board. Do you have a bill sponsor? Have you? I'm assuming you have gone through Sunrise application. So just give us some background on what the next steps are and what steps you have taken so far to get to this point.
Sure, I can probably jump in here. So yes, we did submit the Sunrise process November 1st, and we actually thank you to your executive director for kind of helping us clarify and update that. We obviously that had been submitted for a couple of years now, so we had some older information that is going to be clarified as part of that process as well. We've been working with the various stakeholders. We met with some of the docs, DOs, MDs, a couple of the hospitals, psychiatrists, and started the kind of a stakeholder process. You guys are actually the first ones to see our draft legislation at this point. We've just gotten it back at the beginning of this week, but we'll continue that process. We've also been working with House and Senate staff, their health policy advisors, to start working through what needs to happen at the legislative level. And we've been working with Senator Shope as far as introducing the bill. So he has not agreed to introduce at this point. He's reviewing it. Like we said, we just got the draft back at the beginning of the week. He's reviewing it as we speak, and hopefully we'll have something to introduce here shortly. But then we'll also have some extensive stakeholder meetings, which we hope members of the board will participate in.
Thank you. That's all my questions.
Thank you. Dr. Katarina.
I wanted to be sure. I knew that there were some prescribing psychologists in the military. I saw that in Section 7, the psychologist would be under a physician's care supervision. And you have identified physicians that are willing to supervise?
Yes.
And then there was one little point, 7D. So the supervising physician is not liable for the acts of the psychologist under their supervision. Is that typical? I thought that they would be responsible for their supervisee's, actions. Is that the way it is in the psychologist, general psychologists? Aren't the supervisors liable?
So we modeled this legislation off the New Mexico legislation that's implemented. So that's kind of where that came from. I do know that there's liability insurance has to be held as part of the requirements by the individual psychologists. So that might be a reason for the separation.
Okay.
And Dr. Katarino, if I may, I wonder too, the way that I viewed that was, it isn't the same necessarily as the same type of supervisory relationship. I think it's that added protection of the physician overseeing the care for the individuals as far as like monitoring for side effects and things like that, that may get more complex. That's how I interpreted that. In the relationship is that it wouldn't be like a supervisor supervisee type relationship, but more like an integrated care coordinated relationship of it still being done under the care of. And I think that, and the nurse practitioner model is probably a good like example of what that looks like, where the nurse practitioner is in a lot of these integrated settings, they're able to practice independently. They're licensed to practice independently, but they're still oftentimes doing that under the direction of a physician for that coordination purpose. And that was just
And the physician would not be responsible, liable for any mistakes made by the nurse practitioner, for example? Okay.
My understanding, like in those settings, in like the integrated care settings, and I don't know, Dr. Medina, if you have additional understandings, because I know you guys do some of that work, is that because they're each independently licensed, they each technically have kind of their own regulations and rules that they're following. The expectation here is that coordination, the expectation to coordinate that care, or coordinate some of that oversight. But Dr. Medina, I don't know if you have thoughts to that.
No, I believe that is correct. Because they're each independently licensed, it would fall under the either nurse practitioner or in this case, the prescribing psychologist, unless, and I believe I read this as well, it was a directive from the supervising physician. In that case, then I believe then the supervising physician would be responsible if they did something because the supervising physician recommended that be done.
What I read is, yes, if they directly told them to do mm-hmm. something, they would be liable. But yes. if they were just, the way I interpreted it, if they were just practicing and on their own thought to prescribe a certain medication without checking with the physician would not be responsible, liable. Is that okay?
Ultimately, I believe that is the case. Once they have completed the program and all the requirements and they are certified or licensed as prescribing professionals. Yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
So what we envision at that point is more of a collaborative relationship. Be aware that the training component includes practicums where we have the kind of the more formal supervision that you're thinking of, but that's part of the postdoctoral master's degree in psychopharmacology. So that will take place as part of the education, but not necessarily once we have an associate prescribing psychologist.
I see that. I think that using the term supervising is what is that, you know, throwing me off. Because I realized that they would already have had their license, but then when I see supervising, made me wonder.
No, it's a great point, and that's why we're having this conversation. So appreciate that.
Thank you.
Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, probably a first question, a general question to. Board executive board director and also to Ms. Galpin. As the board of psychologist examiners has no authority or standing over the supervising physician of the psychologist, how are you going to tease out a board complaint of the psychologist if the complaint is made while the person is
I
under
think the they shouldn't use the word supervising
position. Yeah. And so I don't know how that would be done. I don't know if there's an answer to that or if that's something that can be worked out in the details or not.
It's something that we can look at more closely, but during the board's investigation of any complaint, if there was a blueprint on professional conduct, then that physician would be referred to their licensing board.
My second observation and question, I think in the materials, Dr. Thomas, it looks like you're citing the APA Ethics 2017, but Heidi, am I correct that the board has adopted the APA ethics of 2013 because of some specific language. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Dr. Stewart. So the board, but in its rule, R426303, I believe, incorporates by reference the version of the code that was adopted in either 2002 or 2003. And it's specific in terms of there are a few sections of the entire document that are not included in that incorporation by reference. But I did pass that information on to the ASPA group just, you know, for purposes of clarification that, it isn't the most recent or version or its predecessor, but it dates back that far.
Right. And so that would be something that would need to be teased out, I guess, as we move forward. Another just observation, at one point in the reference materials provided, there's a requirement of 150 patients seen under supervision. And then they're in a second place, there's reference to 100 patients being seen under supervision. So I don't know if that makes a difference or if that's just something that needs to be sorted out internally before we get very far along. And those are all my observations or questions, Madam Chair. I'm certainly interested in this as it proceeds and would certainly like to be on a committee if there is such to proceed further on this.
So just very briefly, if I might, I believe the 100 hours was some initial that we had thought under the Sunrise that we were going to go with. In keeping to the model with the New Mexico model, it was up to the 150. So that's where you kind of get the two, that separation. We anticipated that during the Sunrise process, but then in redrafting and modeling. So in the actual legislation, if you look at the bill provided, I believe it's 150.
Thank you. I appreciate that answer. Yes, sir.
Ms. Pacman.
Madam Chair, thank you. I would like to make a request of the board. I do plan to attend all of the hearings that are associated with the legislation, just for purposes of being a resource to provide data or information to anyone who inquires. If there is anything that the board would like for me to represent in that process, I'm happy to do that. I need some direction from the board at some point. I don't think it's necessary to make that decision today. You have a meeting on January 13th. I believe that would still be appropriate timing if the board wishes to impart on me some direction. If there is none, then my attendance and participation will be limited to, you know, merely supplying information if asked.
Thank you. Mr. Diner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question regarding the language in the model bill. I think Dr. Caterino and Dr. Stewart teased out some of the questions that I had relating to those. But my other question is, in some places, there has been reference to things that need to be determined by the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, the State Medical Board, and the Arizona Board of Osteopathic Examiners. And I have questions relating to that. So are these three boards supposed to sort of come together and decide something, determine something? How is that going to work? I mean, each board is separate. We make our own rules. Those boards make their own rules. So what is, I guess, contemplated by the bill drafter in this instance? I just want to know.
Yeah. So this one is, obviously, we wanted to leave those three in there because we are talking about those three entities regulating somebody, whether it's in that supervisory role or whether it's in the probationary role. The New Mexico statute actually does anticipate a creation of almost a new board. We thought that that might be a little bit more cumbersome given the legislative environment and actually doing that, and creating something new with those three memberships. So this one is a little bit ambiguous as to that participation, but obviously we want to make sure that we're allowing for the regulation of each of the individuals by their respective boards and the decisions to be made. Obviously, if there are some discrepancies on how that happens, we'd have to work that out a little bit more internally without the creation of this new board as deciphered by the New Mexico statute.
So just so I'm understanding it correctly, at some point, because I mean, I'm looking at page 6 of the model legislation towards the end, line 43. So it seems like the supervised practicum is to be created by these three boards together because of the word "and." It's not an "or." So I'm just trying to think practically, how is that going to shape up? I mean, are the three executive directors of these boards going to come up with something and each of the boards gets to vote on it? Or if there is disagreement between them, is it like a House Senate process where Senate disagrees on something, proposes amendments, goes to the other board, and they propose some amendments, and it's just going to be a lot of back and forth without any, you know, efficient resolution? So I'm just wondering, you know, what practically, how do you envisage this playing out?
Mr. Diner, we're at the draft stage with that. So those questions have been raised internally within ASPA as well. So I anticipate that there will be some change to that language once we have a final draft of the bill.
Mr. Diner?
Sorry, I mean, I think it seems like this model legislation needs some, I won't say tweaking, because it needs revisions, I think. I heard the next steps being that you're trying to get this passed in the upcoming legislative session. So I'm just worried that we might end up doing something in haste when some kind of more thought or study might be needed to iron out these wrinkles, if you will. So I just wanted your thoughts on what sort of timeline, what sort of process are you looking at? Are you looking at 2023 legislative session, 2024? What's the plan?
So we definitely are looking at this current legislative session for 2023. I think the idea is once we kind of get this model legislation out, we are able to more easily bring some of the identified groups together to see how that process might tease out. Again, whether if the legislature determines that maybe the creation of a new board or whether we call it a different working group to include these individuals, we can kind of tease out how that process is going to work once we can get those stakeholders in. But sometimes in order to draw the stakeholders in, you have to have the legislative process beginning a little bit. So I think Senator Shope, if he ends up being our sponsor, will be a good person to identify to bring those folks together and make sure that we have a process that works. And that everybody feels comfortable implementing. We know that there's going to be some changes to this legislation. This was not going to be the final product. There's still going to have to be some negotiations with the doctors, for instance, with the psychiatrists. So we're willing to make those changes. And again, with the board on how that implementation factor puts into play. We already added a couple extra lines exempting from the rulemaking process and allowing the board to promulgate their own rules on top of whatever happens here to facilitate the implementation of any of this as well. So there is some flexibility that we can utilize, and we do plan to update that draft as it goes.
So ASPA has been very good at updating the psychologist board with the development. So I want to upfront say thank you for that. Over the years, you have been updating us quite a bit. But have you taken views of the other two boards that are impacted by this, the medical board and the osteopathic board?
So we have had an initial meeting with them. Again, that was prior to the drafting of the legislation and just with the SignRise application. We let them know what model statute we were going to try and revise this off of, but you guys are the first ones to see this draft at this point. So bills don't generally get introduced now for about another month. So we have some time and discussion there, and then we'll probably, as Todd well knows, we'll probably have another 6 months after that to figure out what the final product might look like. Hopefully it won't take that long. Hopefully we can put these pieces together a little bit quicker than that, but we want to make sure that we're coming back and updating you folks, obviously, working with Heidi as far as how that implementation is going to work in coordination with those other boards, and make sure that we're satisfactory to all three boards that are going to be impacted.
Dr. Davey.
I'll defer to Dr. Meyer first, since I've spoken already once.
Dr. Meyer.
Thank you. So I'd just like to echo Dr. Caterino's focus on the use of the word supervision. When we're talking about the conditional prescription certificate, I would think that we want to be consistent in how we define supervision and liability requirements between psychologists and prescribing psychologists. So finding a different term, I think, would be good for that. Something to consider. And then kind of following up on Mr. Dinar's questions, you've introduced this to the other boards, but is there a level of support there? Are the medical boards interested in working with prescribing physicians and kind of further blurring the roles that psychologists can engage in?
So I guess, again, they have not seen the legislation. They haven't seen the draft at this point. We're going to start to coordinate the folks. We wanted to let you guys see it first. Here, we've had some introductory conversations with them where there was not an adamant opposition, but obviously they want to see what the legislation looks like prior to any sort of support. And I think that that's something that we'll kind of start to determine and tease out over the next couple of months.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Dr. Meyer. there's we've been attempting this for quite some time. This is be our third time introducing this legislation. There is more a sense of cooperation and less resistance than we have experienced in the past. So the conversations and the way that we're engaging with the physicians is markedly different than it was in our previous attempts. So we foresee more cooperation as we go through this process.
Good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ms. Govan.
I'm just curious if there has been any outreach to the Board of Pharmacy.
Not at this point. We have not engaged them for any meetings, and we haven't shared any drafts with them at this point.
I would certainly encourage that, for sure. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And like I said, I think, you know, we wanted to, once we have this draft out and for kind of more for release, we'll definitely be getting a broader stakeholder base and getting broader feedback than we've been able to accomplish.
Thank you. Dr. Davey.
My question is probably to board staff. And, you know, if this were to continue down the path of gaining legislative support, working its way through both the House and the Senate and ending up, under our umbrella, under our jurisdiction, who and at what point do we receive an analysis of the types of things that would need to be changed in our statutes? In particular, if you look at, anything 32-2063 under powers and duties, like all these areas that will have to be adjusted, what kind of support do we have to run that analysis? Can somebody just kind of give me a 5-second overview of how that occurs? I shouldn't say 5 seconds. I was going to say 5 minutes, but that sounded way too long. So let's go with like a minute overview. I guess that question's to board staff or to Jean.
Ms. Packdown, are you comfortable with answering this one?
I'm sorry, Dr. Davey. Will you repeat the question?
So let's just say everything goes right. Let's just say that everybody's on board and all of a sudden it's like, yep, we're going to put this new license under our purview. You know, there's language in our Arizona revised statutes that obviously would need to be updated, changed to be able to broaden our scope and to insert some things around this particular practice. Who analyzes our statutes and would say, all right, here's the edits that need to occur in order to make this happen?
Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, so the bill itself enacts the changes to, if passed, it would enact the changes to the statute. So the Legislative Council staff, their task is not only to, you know, introduce the language that presents the substantive changes, but also to look for any instances where other changes need to be made as a result of the substantive change that is being proposed. So that is supposed to be, you know, a comprehensive, well thought out effort, I guess I would describe it. That being said, I think it's also incumbent on me and all of the board to be looking at all of those things very, very carefully to make sure that there aren't unintended consequences. And I say that because every piece of legislation, it seems, has unintended consequences. So we want to be aware of where those might be raising those issues if and when we discover them. We do have a delayed implementation date in the form of when the session concludes. It's, I believe, 90 days until any legislative changes actually take effect. And then the real work needs to begin with respect to the drafting of the rules. And so that is a process that at best can be accomplished within 1 year. I think because this is such a significant change, we can expect the rule revision process to be to require longer than that. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question that effectively.
No, that's exactly right. I would be interested, like, are we going to get a mock-up of, like, how our definitions might change or how, ARS 32-2063 powers and duties may change. The meetings and quorum section may have to be updated, right? I was just interested to know. So what my understanding is that as this moves forward, someone within the legislative process then kind of pulls the impact of, say, the new legislation and pulls it through all of the potential statutes that it may touch, and then provides us a mock-up draft of what those suggested edits would look like for our review. We would also do most likely an independent review of any place we think there may be areas that need to be adjusted or at least taken into consideration. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davey, you are. What I think is important as part of that process is ASPA may not be aware of, the sponsor may not be aware of, the drafter may not be aware of certain changes that this board may want as part of this process. So it's important for the board to, you know, think about those things and raise them as early in the process as you can to minimize the need and the effort involved to come back and, you know, amend this bill as it progresses. So if we overlook something or something occurs to us kind of later in the process, you know, that's what has to happen, is it, the bill needs to be amended. And that sort of, that may or may not be successful, and it may or may not impact the velocity or whatever of the bill. So I guess what I'm saying is the sooner the board has clarity in terms of what, you know, you really believe is important to be in this legislation, the better.
Thank you. I think that is an important thing, that as this moves forward, that we, if we're seeing this from the legislative committee or you're seeing it on the legislative dockets gain traction, then I think it would be incumbent upon us to start to take a look at our statutes and see where we might start to have some discussions of things we would at least want to bring forward to anyone who would be drafting said changes. So thank you, Ms. Pacanon. I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To dovetail on Dr. Davies' questions, what about case law? So Arizona Appellate Court ruled in Cotner v. Listy, a county case, that under required medications and a hearing under SELL, S-E-L-L, that it had to be a physician to speak to the medication. And so we have that case law here in Arizona that Arizona adheres to. How do we just wait for another challenge in the future in order to include prescribing psychologists as being authorized to opine on medications for restoration to mental competency, or what? And that's directed to Ms. Galpin and also the attorneys in the group.
Dr. Stewart, I'm not familiar with those cases, so I don't feel comfortable opining.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Stewart, perhaps one thing that you can do, or I mean, board staff have noted it for the record, perhaps that's something that we can put kind of just on the radar for future conversation. And then if that's, you know, in the meeting minutes or can also be provided to ASPA and Mr. Mortel, so that they can also look at some of those things. I think I have personally, I'm kind of like Dr. Davey, trying to figure out how all the little moving pieces work. And so I would imagine that there's little snippets of things that perhaps others haven't even heard of. So I appreciate you bringing it up. And I think it's something that perhaps if you know, ESPA, Mr. Mortel haven't looked into that yet. Maybe that is worthwhile for them to look into. And then meanwhile, of course, we can do some more exploration as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also, a follow-up question along the same lines. How does it impact on involuntary commitment, involuntary forced medications? Right now, under Title 36 in Arizona, is involuntary commitment laws, assessment and commitment. It takes two psychiatrists to do that. Psychologists can render a third opinion if it gets to that point. But right now it requires two psychiatrists or two physicians familiar with psychiatric medicine. And so I'm wondering how that, you know, how would that impact? Does that open the door for psychologists to become opiners of Title 36 involuntary commitment or not? And I'm sure that can't be answered here and now, but that should be a part of the thinking process of the, as this moves forward. That's all my questions.
Thank you. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also had a quick question about the controlled substances. What I see is it's if authorized to prescribe, are you pursuing that along with psychotropic meds? What is your goal regarding controlled substances?
We would want prescribing psychologists that work in the and treating people with substance use disorders to be able to prescribe things like Suboxone or methadone to be able to help treat people with opioid addiction. That's the thinking there. One of the things that would be excluded is prescribing psychologists would not practice in the area of pain management. That would be out of the scope. So that would, you know, they would not prescribe to treat pain. And that models what they do in New Mexico. That is excluded from the scope of practice there as well.
Okay. I think it's very important that you specifically address medication-assisted treatment for addiction. I think that's a crucial need and would strengthen the argument, I think, to push forward with this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To follow up on Dr. Meyer's line of inquiry, a second area, certainly not to prescribe opioids, and that makes good sense. But benzodiazepines is the second opioid crisis. Benzos are not opioids, but addiction to the short-term, short-acting benzos like Xanax is horrible in this country. And would we be opening the door for psychologists to exacerbate that problem? I know that when nurse practitioners gain prescription authority, we look at the Board of Pharmacy and the databanks, and it has been problematic. Are psychologists inadvertently opening ourselves up to that type of problem?
The data, when you look at how prescribing psychologists work in other states, is actually that they're less likely to prescribe. And I would also point out that part of having a prescription privilege gives a provider the right to unprescribe. And so to perhaps taper people off and to help them get off of benzodiazepines. So it is a two-way street. Yes, there may be more people that prescribe those. What we tend to see is that prescribing psychologists, prescribe as part of their therapy. So we don't see psychologists doing, you know, the 10-minute med management type practice that other prescribing professions do. So there tends to be a much more controlled approach. I don't think psychologists will be apt to abandon their fundamental training as a psychologist. And, could that happen? Yeah, for sure.
Thank you, Dr. Thomas.
Mr. Diner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So maybe this is part comment and part question. So my comment is, I've heard several times now that New Mexico has done XYZ, and I don't know about other people, but for me, it just seems to be a very evasive answer because, I mean, we don't know what the New Mexico experience has been like. That leads to my question. We as the board probably need to have a study session on New Mexico's experience with all of this. I, for one, have no idea how New Mexico prescribing psychologists are, you know, getting licensed. I have no idea. And, you know, I try to be reasonably informed about the profession, but, you know, I have no idea, then I'm pretty sure one other person somewhere has no idea about this. So just saying that, you know, something is done in New Mexico, therefore Arizona should do it, is not persuasive to me. So it would be helpful if AZPA would help the board, you know, have some kind of a study session just to learn from New Mexico people who have dealt with this, so we can better understand what needs to happen in Arizona, practically speaking, from the board's perspective. Thank you.
Mr. Diner, I have provided the board with all of the relevant material from New Mexico. Part of the reason that we have modeled them is that they've been doing this for 20 years and have been successful and not had a lot of problems. That is the reason that we've modeled their legislation and the way that they've done it. We're the first state to approve this and have had it going on for, you know, a couple of decades now.
Thank you. Dr. Caterina.
If we were to look at New Mexico, I would also look at the other states that have prescribing psychologists too. And so not just New Mexico. And secondly, we talked about different medications. There's a big controversy now about stimulants being prescribed for ADHD. So that would be something else. And they're even difficult to obtain at pharmacies now, any kind of Adderall or medication, because it's been overprescribed partially by online prescribers from, you know, large companies, not individuals. So that would also be something that might come up, and you might want to figure out how you're going to defend that, because I think it's needed, but that might be something that the legislature has questions about. And that's all.
Thank you. Any additional questions? And Dr. Caterino, you'll want to move your hand. I do want to just note the raising of the hand, Dr. Sherrill, I'll get to in just a second. Feature on Zoom makes this extremely, extremely streamlined. So thank you guys for using that. It helps tremendously. Zoom actually puts you in order by who raised their hands first. So it actually, and then it pins it, and it makes it really easy. So thank you guys for doing so. Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wish to thank Dr. Thomas and the others for being here. This has been very educational. It's certainly something that is coming. I was a part of it, you know, 10, 15 years ago, back when New Mexico passed their legislation, and we made an attempt, and it did not get very far, not gain much traction. But this sounds like it's gained a lot of traction. And I just really appreciate the folks on the AZPA prescription psychologist committee that have worked on this. And Jeff, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for allowing us this time.
Thank you. Ms. Galvin.
I think my question's been answered. Thank you.
Fantastic. Any additional questions? I just wanted to briefly kind of echo some of the things that Dr. Davey was bringing up. And again, I think part of it comes from, well, one, us being chaired by chair right now and knowing kind of the burden that the board has had over the board staff has had over the last year in, you know, making sure that all, I mean, there's just a lot of things that they're doing. And so there are resource constraints. And I think that while it doesn't necessarily negate the need for this type of accommodation, obviously it, you know, getting into a psychiatrist is, especially as a new patient, is extremely, extremely difficult right now, and especially in pediatrics. And so I don't want to negate the importance of the work you guys are doing. But I do want to echo what Dr. Davey is saying as we have watched really our board staff, I mean, extended hours, weekend work, a lot of different things. And so I do want to acknowledge that this will continue to add to that burden. And I think we need to work with board staff very carefully on and legislation and budgets and whatever to make sure that we're not adding to an already extremely, extremely constrained, you know, kind of tasks that they have. Also in Dr. Davey's points being that, you know, we were a profession, that came on, you know, to the board requesting that licensure, that representation, was so important. And, you know, Dr. Davey shared the importance of that from the perspective of the behavior analyst. And like, you know, we were essentially being regulated without any type of representation. And initially when all of that happened and we brought that concern in the first place, a couple of the board members were like, no, as psychologists, we know behavior analysis too. So we're comfortable doing this. And what they learned through the process and the perspective that I just want to share, because, I don't think other than Dr. Davey and myself, I don't know that anybody else was a part of those early conversations, is that they too, the board too, like came to the realization really quickly that while they understood behavior analysis as a construct, as a science, how it fits into the world, they didn't have a clear understanding or a pathway for the understanding of how to then regulate behavior analysts. And so the formation of the committee, yes, it was most definitely of benefit to the behavior analysts, but we heard prior to moving in that direction and during that whole process that it was actually the wishes of the board as well, because that regulation is so challenging. Now, where we're at right now is we have a composition of the board. I should take a step back, because it sounds like Dr. Stewart and of course Dr. Medina's experience in integrated care, you know, we're leveraging a little bit better, but we don't have necessarily all that expertise, and that makes regulation very challenging. And you know, a lot of the work of the board is you know, political, right? And in some fashion. And so this kind of movement through who's going to be in the board composition, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, are all things that in hindsight, as behavior analysts, we didn't think about. And I don't know that was anything that was relayed. So I'm only sharing these things as kind of, it's not to negate the work you guys are doing. It's really to just think about, you know, what happens when, you know, those prescribing psychologists are so busy because it would essentially be a new profession, if you will, in Arizona. And as a new profession, we're not looking at individuals that are ready for retirement or that have flexible schedules or that own their own practice. Like, there's going to be all of these, they're going to be inundated with a lot of work. And so, and that's what we have with behavior analysts. We're a very new, early profession. The science isn't new, but the profession in its regulatory status is new. And so there's a lot of work to be done. And so finding a behavior analyst that has time to commit to the board on assisting with regulation, practice monitoring, those sorts of things is constrained because of the nature of the newness of the profession. So again, these are just, you know, things, they're growing pains. I don't think they're like any deal breakers. I just ask that especially ASPA, as a group that has continued to support the work of the board and, you know, kind of work together in these stakeholder conversations, that you just keep those things in the forefront of your mind as well. Because we are very fortunate to have the staff that we do. We are very fortunate to have the board members that we do, but it changes and it moves and those sorts of things, you know, become a challenge. Ms. Packman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard you make some really excellent points, and I'm not sure you said this, but this is what, through my mental filter, what I came away with is that maybe there's an opportunity here for any proposed legislation to include a bit of an appropriation increase for the board to hire the expertise that I think would better ensure that the implementation of the regulation is well thought out and effective. I don't know if such a resource exists, but I would like to think there is such a thing. So as I think about, you know, the what next year's appropriation likely looks like, I don't see a whole lot of room for something like this. So an additional appropriation would be very welcomed.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right, hearing none, I believe this was just a discussion. There's no actions to take here at this time. We appreciate you guys getting us this information, being present today, and having this conversation with us. And we hope that some of the questioning and feedback was helpful for you guys through the process. And please do continue to keep us apprised of, you know, the work that you're doing. It sounds like there's several board members that are, you know, quite interested in following kind of the status of where you guys are at here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you again for the time.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we are going to move into the timed item, but before we do, I want to make sure that all parties are present, and do we need a comfort break, or is everybody good to go? Okay.
Madam Chair, I do want to let you know that Dr. Olshan had joined the meeting a little while ago, but I saw that he had left about 5 minutes ago. He just sent me an email stating he lost internet connection and is going to try to call in using his phone. And we haven't had anyone join in the last minute, so it may be helpful to take a comfort break or go to a different agenda item.
Let's see. I don't know if we...
I would vote for comfort break.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a comfort break if we can do. Let's do 10 minutes and resume back here at 9:56. Ready now. So we can go ahead and get started. We are going to move to agenda item 8 for just a moment to allow Dr. Olshan the opportunity to rejoin the meeting. Agenda item number 8 is, if everybody could mute. themselves. Okay. Is going to be the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding accepting the signed consent agreement for surrender of psychologist license from Austin McCall and vacating the scheduled formal hearing. This matter is on today's agenda at Dr. McCall's request. She is requesting the voluntary surrender of her license. Ms. Michelson, can you provide an update on this matter?
Yes, Madam Chair. I see Ms. Geltman had her hand up. Did you want to make a comment?
No, I was counting board members. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I'll keep my summary brief, Madam Chair. As the board may recall, Dr. McCall's psychologist license was summarily suspended by the board following its meeting on October 12th regarding her noncompliance with the consent agreement as it relates to positive drug test results. At that meeting, the board voted to remand the case to a formal hearing with the Office of Administrative Hearings to pursue a revocation of her license. That hearing was originally scheduled for November 17th, but at the request of Dr. McCall's attorney, the parties agreed to reschedule the hearing for December 14th to 15th. When the hearing notice was sent to Dr. McCall and her attorney on October 24th, staff also sent a proposed consent agreement for surrender of psychologist license for her consideration, noting that Dr. McCall may wish to consider this consent agreement in lieu of the time, expense, and uncertainty of a formal administrative hearing. The proposed consent agreement consisted of findings of facts and conclusions of law derived from the investigative record and reflecting the board's findings from the October 12th meeting. Approximately 1 month later, while preparing for the hearing, staff was notified by Dr. McCall's attorney on November 29th by email that Dr. McCall had chosen to surrender her license and the signed agreement was supplied with her email. The signed agreement is before the board today for review and possible approval. If approved, the surrender will go into effect immediately. And I do want to note that the board would also need to include in its motion to vacate the scheduled formal hearing if they so choose to accept that agreement. Licensure surrender is a disciplinary action that would require notification to the data bank. While some regulatory boards in Arizona have a statutory bar to with respect for applying for licensure after revocation or a surrender, this board does not. However, in the future, if Dr. McCall elects to reapply for licensure, she would have the burden to demonstrate to the board that she has effectively remedied the issues that led to her surrender. It would then be within the board's discretion to determine whether she is safe to practice psychology and shall be granted a new license. Staff was notified last week that Ms. Thibodeau is no longer representing Dr. McCall. We did invite Dr. McCall to today's meeting, but I do not see that she is present. If there are any questions, please let me know.
Are there any questions for Ms. Michelson? Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Michelson, probably more just a comment than a question. I appreciate your work on this. I know it was a difficult decision for Dr. McCall to come to, but I think it suits her needs as well as makes this a lot easier process. I just appreciate the effort involved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions for for Ms. Michelson? Hearing none. Dr. McCall, are you on the line? If you are, please unmute yourself and make a statement if you would like. Hearing none, we will move forward. Do we have any discussion, Dr. Meyer?
I was going to make a motion to accept the surrender and vacate the court date.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
We will need a roll call.
Okay. Ms. Poe, will you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Present.
Is that a yes?
Barely, I need a nap as well. Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Davy?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Nguyen?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you. And I too want to echo what Dr. Stewart said about board staff on this this matter, any of the matters, really, the amount of work and dedication that they put forth on this, but also for the board members as well. I think that everybody did a phenomenal job in navigating this, and we do really wish the best for Dr. McCall, and hopefully we will get an opportunity to see her again. All right, we will now move to agenda item number 9. This will be the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding election of 2023 officers. We have the chair, vice chair, and secretary positions. Ms. Pacnon, would you please provide a summary of this matter?
Yes, Madam Chair. So I had solicited from the board members their interest in campaigning for, if you will, any of these officer positions. And I provided the most recent set of responses from everyone in a memorandum that I uploaded a couple of days ago. In the past, I believe this has been sort of somewhat of an informal process, but you have started with the chair vote, accepted motions, accepted or invited the candidates, if you will, to give their stump speeches, and then, proceeded from chair to vice chair to the secretary position. So however you want to facilitate any input or endorsements or speeches from the candidates, I think is up to the chair's discretion at this point.
Thank you. I mean, I would like to hear from the candidates. Do we want to start with chair? Oh, sorry, Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know my favorite person right now, Dr. Malott, nominated me for chair. I am concerned about my ability to commit the necessary time to effectively hold that position. I would be willing to do vice chair and provide some support, but I'm just, I think some of the staff can speak to my delayed email responses. If there's another option, I would prefer to do vice chair. If there are no other options, I would be willing to serve as chair.
Thank you. Dr. Davey. Oh, you're muted.
I just want to be clear that Dr. Malott just beat a couple of us, I think, in terms of your nominations. I just want to be clear on that. And then I just, Madam Chair, I was actually traveling when these emails were going back and forth for work. And I think as many other members have identified, I have been the vice chair for your chairwomanship for the last 2 years. And, if needed, would be willing to step forward. But I am, along with Dr. Malott, see Dr. Meyer is a very viable candidate. And Dr. Medina, I would just say, with you being new to the board, thank you for stepping up and appreciate that as well. That is a strong move on your part to be able to commit to being a part of that early on as you just joined us. So kudos.
Thank you. I also think Dr. Meyer would be a great choice.
Agreed.
Dr. Meyer's face right now is just
there was a part before that I said, it seems to be getting ignored, but
I didn't hear it. You were breaking up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, your internet was no good.
I was very moved by Dr. Davies, evidence for why he would perform as an excellent chair, having had that experience as vice chair, seems like a natural progression to kind of fulfill his leadership abilities and lead us to the next step, which I would be happy to support.
Thank you. Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would certainly be willing to support Dr. Meyer as chair, And it's just the old political thing of, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve. I think Dr. Meyer needs to just kind of jump in and accept that we want him as chair.
Dr. Caterina.
Well, it seemed to me in my therapeutic judgment that Dr. Meyer is busy and we would be, though he would be a fantastic chair, I think he may want to be the vice chair, and Dr. Davey might also be an excellent chair, and then maybe everybody would be happy. So I think maybe next time in the next year, Dr. Meyer's schedule may be a little freer. I don't want anything forced on anybody. So
thank you, Dr. Caterina. We have a nomination for Dr. Meyer. Dr. Davey is able to, in the natural transition. I would like to nominate Dr. Stewart. I think that, especially over the last few meetings, I think Dr. Stewart has just shown an enormous amount of leadership and professionalism. And I do know that the idea of the chair position may seem intimidating. To be honest, the board staff do such a wonderful job that it's very seamless. Obviously, you know, through transitions and supports with vice chair, there's a lot of supports available. And I think that, Dr. Stewart would be able to kind of pave the way for the group. And you know, we are working on some Zoom etiquette tools and some other things for the incoming chair, so we can help support this facilitation. So I would like to nominate Dr. Stewart as well. So I guess the question is, Dr. Stewart, would you accept that?
Madam Chair, I certainly appreciate your vote of confidence. My natural assessment of the board is I'm the second junior most member. Only Dr. Medina is greener than I. And so I would certainly, if Dr. Davey would be willing to step up as chair, I'd support that first. If Dr. Meyer absolutely cannot do it because of schedule, that's understandable. But I would, if Dr. Davey cannot do it, I would entertain that to be chair. But I would prefer Dr. Davey to be chair because he has much more experience than I do. But I do appreciate the kind words.
Absolutely. Dr. Davey.
I just have to say that I am thrilled that we have such a bench forming up of individuals willing. And so I'd like to make sure that this is memorialized, that, that this is not brushed under the rug a year from now, right? I mean, I feel like this is a lot of pomp and circumstance around I coulda, shoulda, woulda, well in the future kind of thing. So, I mean, I would want Dr. Meyer and Dr. Stewart's writing in blood, Heidi Packinen, that they are, willing to move forward into leadership positions. as they go forward, I have been the vice chair for a couple of years. I think that Dr. Davis Wilson has provided a good example of how to moderate the board's movement forward, and I do agree with the times that I've had to step in with everyone's assessment that if it was not for the board staff, that the work of this board just would be bogged down to a complete halt. So without having the likes of Heidi, Ms. Malis, and Jennifer. And Kathy, things do not get done, and they are really the workhorses. Again, if Dr. Meyer is dead set on not doing it just because of work, I'd be happy to serve as for a year in that position as kind of the natural progression. But again, I would defer if Dr. Meyer is a hard no, then I would be happy to do that.
Let's just make it an official hard no then.
You've got, come on, isn't part of your agreement through the faculty, like through your evaluation, do community service and to be a part of boards? And isn't that part of like 10% of your time somewhere?
Yeah, this has been more than 10% of my time.
Dr. Davey, I think you just solidified your position as chair-elect.
You're going to become a professor. So
we do have Dr. Davey as our nomination for chair. As Dr. Davey, as you are aware, board staff does a phenomenal job. One other opportunity that board staff, you know, can explore for you as well. And I think, and this was part of the discussion or my thought process in general, you know, with the behavior analysts, we have a single committee. With the psychologist, there's 3 and 4 committees. And so and especially with some of the quorum things and what have you, and CSC that requires a psychologist to be present, I do understand that between this meeting and the committee work that this can be that this can be overwhelming. And so with that, Dr. Davey, board staff has agreed to, you know, work with you on ways that we can modify some of the committee work allocation amongst the other committee workers. Obviously, you know, include you, but please feel free to work with Ms. Packin on that as well. If you get elected, we still have to vote. So, so we will go ahead and do a vote for chair. Nomination is for Dr. Davey. Does it need to be roll call or can it just be informal? Okay.
It does not have to be roll call unless we think it's going to be a close vote.
I think it's going to be unanimous.
All in favor of Dr. Davey for 2023 chair?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
You're not written down, Dr. Davey.
I abstain. And hold out a singular vote for Dr.
Congratulations.
So we do, in looking at vice chair, we have had a couple of nominations. Now, we can vote. So if there's, you know, two folks nominated, we can vote either way. And it doesn't have to be that we zero in on one and vote. But I think we're all kind of still in this similar boat. I think one, Dr. Medina is stepping up. Thank you so very much for offering to support where you can. Dr. Meyer, I know that you, some of the kind of points that you've raised for yourself, would you like to accept the nomination for vice chair, or would you prefer to, you know, maybe default to another year, knowing the committee compositions and the work that we're using you for the committee?
No, I would be happy to serve as vice chair.
Fantastic. So then, you know, Dr. Stewart, I know we had worked or you had expressed that you would be willing to accept. Would you like to
I defer to Dr. Meyer's nomination for vice chair.
Fantastic. Then let's go ahead and move forward with a vote for Dr. Meyer for vice chair. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Now we are on to secretary, and I've kind of lost track from there, Ms. Packinon. So our current nominees are Dr. Stewart and Dr. Medina, correct? Dr. Stewart. Is that correct?
Only Dr. Stewart.
Dr. Okay. Medina.
No, I did not. No, no, no. That's not a nomination. No, no.
No, yes.
It's a Dr. Stewart nomination.
Yes, the other nominee, Madam Chair, is Mr. Dinar. So we have Dr. Stewart and Mr. Dinar. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
I would defer to Mr. Dinar with he has much greater experience with the board than I do.
And Dr. Stewart, I was going to say exactly the same thing. I would defer to Dr. Stewart. So and we are fine.
Yeah, I'll let you guys know that we for the secretary, because of COVID, thankfully because of COVID, right? everything has kind of moved to an electronic format. I know Dr. Catarino may be able to speak to it. She's been secretary post COVID, but it is a relatively low load, easy amount of work. There's not a ton of stuff. It used to be that there was mailing back and forth and we'd have to go in and sign a bunch of things in the in-person meetings, but those have all kind of evolved with the COVID stuff. So I don't know, Dr. Catarino, if you want to kind of give an oversight of what the secretary position was like.
Yes. I mean, the only problems I had is when I had to miss due to surgery, but there's, I guess, a recording company that does transcribe the minutes, and mostly I look them over, and if I don't see any errors, approve them. So there really is not the kind of work that you typically think of as a recording secretary.
Fantastic. All right, so we have two nominees that are before us.
I nominate Mr. Dinar.
All right, Mr. Dinar, are you okay with that nomination?
I am okay with that nomination, with
all right,
with the proviso that, you know, Dr. Stewart and I need to have some words after this.
Fantastic. All right, Mr. Dinar, for secretary, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Abstain.
Thank you for that clarification. the motion carries. Thank you guys so very much for your dedication and work towards this. Again, Dr. Medina and Dr. Stewart, I really do appreciate you guys being available to the board. One of the things that, and you know, I can defer to board staff on this, but one of the things that I think would be helpful in 2023 is that, you know, kind of helping with the committee work and the claim reviews. And so if it is, if you guys are, you know, wanting to learn more about the processes and all of, you know, these sorts of things, letting the group know. I know they do the schedule for the committee work, but sometimes that changes. So even if you get the schedule for committee work and you're like, oh, I'm first quarter ARC, second quarter CSC or what have you, if you know that there's a committee that you like that you're willing to fill in on, or if you know that there's a certain time of the year that even though you may not be on a committee, you may be willing to do, board staff tries really hard to make sure you're not serving on a million committees at once. But if you have some time to tag team, you know, ARC and CSC for a quarter because you've got some downtime or whatever, or you just want to be a backup person, please feel free to communicate that to the board or to board staff. Sometimes illnesses, changes in schedules, changes in board compensation, that gets hard. And I know the ARC and the CSC really do rely on the psychologist participation, while CSC is statutorily required. So anything that you guys would like to contribute above and beyond that schedule, or just even as backup, please do relay that to the board staff. They would greatly appreciate that. And that goes for everybody. Dr. Catarino, Mr. Wynn, and Mr. Steiner, if you guys are aware of, you know, sometimes where you can help with some of those committees, that would be immensely helpful, because as things change and move around, I know Jennifer is having to get very strategic, and they don't want to overload you guys. So they're having to, you know, they're trying to make sure that they are cognizant of your guys's time as well. So that would be helpful. All right. Any questions? Fantastic. Well, congratulations, everybody. That's very exciting. And we will move forward with the next agenda item. I believe we do now have all parties present. So we will move to the timed item. That's going to be agenda item number 7. I do need to switch forms. All right. And all parties are present, right, Ms. Michelson? I see Dr. Olshan.
Correct, Madam Chair. Dr. Olshan is present and the complainant DJ as well.
Thank you. All right, the time is now 10:25 a.m. on December 9th, 2022. This is the informal interview of Dr. Olshan in case number 22-30. Dr. Olshan, if you are present, please turn on your camera. I see that he is present. Dr. Olshan, are you represented by legal counsel today?
Not at this point.
Thank you. I am Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson, and I am the chair of the board. I will call on each board member to introduce themselves and state their specific role on the board. Also present, let me do the introductions. I apologize. Dr. Katarina?
Board member and secretary.
Can you please state your name for the record as well?
Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Linda Catarino, board member and secretary.
Thank you. Dr. Davey.
Yes, Brian Davey, board certified behavior analyst, representing behavior analyst and vice chair for at least another couple of days.
Dr. Medina.
Dr. Diana Medina, board member.
Dr. Meyer.
Hi, Matt Meyer. Educational board member.
Mr. Nguyen.
Todd Nguyen, board member.
Mr. Diner.
Thank you, Dr. Olshan, for being here. I'm Adi Diner. I'm a public member on the board.
Dr. Stewart.
Joe Stewart. I'm a psychologist board member.
Thank you. I think I got everybody, and present with us are also the board staff and Jean Galvin, the board's attorney. This proceeding is being recorded, so everyone must speak loudly and clearly, and only one person is permitted to speak at a time. Dr. Olshan, you have been noticed of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at an informal interview. The purpose of the informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case. Board members have read all the materials and additional submissions. If it is necessary to refer to clients or patients during the interview, please do so by only initials. I will read the allegations from the informal interview notice, and then we will interview you. In complaint number 22-30, it is alleged that you engaged in unprofessional conduct, including but not limited to possible violations of the following. ARS 32-206116C, making or using statements of a character tending to deceive or mislead. ARS 32-206116E, gross negligence in the practice of a psychologist. ARS 32-206116G, engaging or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. ARS 32-206116H, failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychologist services provided to a client or patient. ARS 32-206116J, making a fraudulent or untrue statement to the board or its investigators, staff, or consultants. ARS 32-206116O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as psychologists that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. ARS 32-206116V, abandoning or neglecting a client or patient in need of immediate care without making suitable arrangements for continuation of care. ARS 32-206116AA, violating a formal board order, consent agreement, term of probation, or stipulated agreement issued under this chapter. ARS 32-206116DD, violating ethical standard adopted by the board as it pertains to sections 2.04, basis for scientific and professional judgments, 3.10, informed consent, 9.03, informed consent and assessments, and 10.01, informed consent to therapy of the APA ethics code. Dr. Olshan, I will now swear you in. Under penalty of perjury, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. To begin the interview, we will start with a summary of the case. If that, Dr. Meyer, you are the lead board member, so can you please proceed with a summary of this case?
Madam Chair, my understanding was you were the lead on this.
I thought that's what you were going to say. So I pulled up my notes. read that in the script and I was like, maybe it changed. But I did pull up my notes to be prepared. I will go ahead and provide a summary. On April 29th, 2022, board staff received a complaint from DJ, his current wife, against Dr. Olshan, alleging that Dr. Olshan provided services to son without father's written consent or knowledge, failed to interview father as part of the evaluation process, made a recommendation regarding custody based on one-sided information from mother, and did not interview all relevant parties in the matter to include the father. On the same day as the complaint, the court issued an order regarding DJ and his ex-wife, who have one son together, to modify legal decision-making, parenting time, and child support. It appears that the mother submitted a motion to modify the terms after having received Dr. Olshan's report. With his complaint, the father noted Dr. Olshan's report and various information from DCS to include a 2021 family functioning assessment, an aftercare plan, and various notes from a DCS investigation of child abuse. In October of 2021, the mother initiated therapy services with Dr. Olshan. The son was 11 years old at the time. Son had had 6 sessions with Dr. Olshan between October of 2021 and April of 2022, some of which the mother was present for. On February 24th, 2022, Dr. Olshan issued a 3-page report at the request of the mother regarding son's psychological evaluation, in which he indicated that it was his professional opinion that based on the 6 sessions with his son, the custody arrangements needed to be modified and that the son should be living with mother at least 3/4 of the time and that father should have supervised visits or be in a structured environment. The licensee did respond in a timely manner. Board staff received that response on June 6, 2022. In that response, Dr. Olshan provides the following. Dr. Olshan has concerns regarding the validity of the complaint as it was filed by DJ's wife. He feels compelled to share that he has concerns regarding his safety given the circumstances surrounding father's termination from his employer. It makes Dr. Olshan even more uncomfortable knowing that the father did not appeal any of the charges that were placed against him. It is Dr. Olshan's hope that the board will see the complaint for what it truly is, and that is that the complainant is angry over the court ruling. Dr. Olshan believes that the clinical record will answer any of the questions the board may have. The complaint presents as a much different picture regarding father's relationship with the son, and that Dr. Olshan prior to meeting with the son, the mother presented Dr. Olshan an amended parenting plan that stated that the parties shall share joint legal decision-making, with mother having final authority on medical issues, including counseling. Throughout the course of treatment, Dr. Olshan has been assured by multiple parties that the father had been informed of Dr. Olshan's counseling, and the record demonstrates that Dr. Olshan indicated multiple times that he encouraged individuals to inform father that he'd be willing to talk to him. Dr. Olshan never received any correspondence from father. Dr. Olshan does represent that no psychological evaluation took place and that the report incorrectly stated this. We did also request that Dr. Olshan provide for us proof of the attempts to contact father to gain the consent for treatment of services, of which Dr. Olshan did send a handwritten log. We did request board staff to subpoena that information. However, board staff have been unable to gather that information. And I don't know, Ms. Michelson, if you would like to provide a summary of your efforts there, but my summary is concluded. So perhaps that would be a good opportunity for you to provide a summary of those efforts.
Madam Chair, just to clarify, the efforts to obtain the phone records. Yes. So when the initial review took place back in September, the board directed me to obtain Dr. Olshan's phone records to verify his efforts to contact the dad. He had supplied the phone logs regarding his attempts. Following that board meeting, Ms. Pakanon did email Dr. Olshan asking him to verify the phone number that he had contacted the father at, so we can ensure that we sent the subpoena for the correct phone number. Dr. Olshan did respond, indicating that he did not use his phone number to call back the father. He stated that the phone used was the office phone of a friend who allows them to use his office twice a week. He indicated their business is highly confidential and she will not agree to a subpoena for phone records and has already contacted an attorney. So board staff was unable to send a subpoena as this phone number was not provided to us. Additionally, Dr. Olshan did not provide any further documentation regarding his efforts to contact the father, DJ.
Thank you. Are there any questions for myself or for Ms. Michelson? Hearing none. Dr. Olshan, did you review the investigative record in the case in preparation for your appearance today?
No, I did not.
Do you wish to make any opening remarks?
Yes, I disagree with all of the charges. I think it's prejudicial, capricious, and misdirected. Very important things were left out. And at this point, I think this should go before a judge because I need to subpoena and depose the complainant, the juvenile, and the mother. The mother gave me the wrong phone number. None of you have noticed that I was calling the wrong number. And I want to depose everybody. And I want this before a judge because I think this has turned into a kangaroo court. I think there's prejudice against me. What the board could not do 2 years ago, you're trying to complete now. And that is to not only destroy my life, but destroy my family, destroy 47 years of work. And you have left out numerous things within this. I also object to the fact that when I was giving testimony, it was as if I was guilty and had to prove I was innocent. Yet when any questions were posed to the complainant, who has a very, very questionable background, he was treated like he was royalty. He was not questioned very hard. Every statement he made was accepted as the truth. And I was accused of many things which were not true. The first time I was interviewed, other than the fact that somebody's baby was crying in the middle of the interview, which I thought was very unprofessional. That's my opinion of this. And I obviously, 3 years ago, I had to spend $50,000 to defend myself. I also have lost all of my contracts because of the board's posting. When you pull up my name, it's the second one down, and it says right there, unprofessional conduct. I have had people call me and say, I was going to see you, but I'm not because of that. I've lost patience, and I complain, but I have been told that that's out of their hands. That will be there for 5 years. So I lost my contract with the Maricopa County, which applied 75% of my income. Jennifer knows this. And I've been trying to rebuild my practice. But that sits there. So I see this as the board's attempt to finally get rid of me. I think it's age prejudicial at this point. And I am requesting that this be brought before a judge and that I be allowed to proceed because this is my life you're talking about and the life of my wife. And so I want it all brought out. I want the complainant under deposition.
Doctor,
I want his background brought up. No, I'm talking. I want Dr. Olson, I want
that the, is not how we're going to speak to the attorney. So
well, okay.
Dr. Olson, I apologize for interrupting you, and I lost my internet connection, but I am back. What I am understanding you to say is that you don't want to participate in this informal interview, and you are requesting that this matter be referred to the Office of Administrative Hearings for a formal hearing. Is that what I understand?
Yes, because I do not believe that you folks have done a valid, let's take the phone number, for example. I let it be known that the mother had given me the phone number. The audios I've supplied of the young man crying and trying to get away from his father. All of these things have been overlooked. And I've had several attorneys look at the case, but I didn't want to spend the money. And they said, one of them said, wow, the board's looking at going after you. They want to finish what they tried before. So, yes, I don't see, I mean, it's not going to do me any good because you're going to hear the complainant. You'll believe everything he says. I mean, I will give you an example. Is in that first meeting when I made the comment that I had the magazine, I had the article from the magazine regarding the complainant and his association with undesirables. And all of a sudden, I was breaking confidence. Yet I explained that I was talking to a police officer who's in my office, not my office that I use for counseling. And that was on my desk because I write for gun magazines, Recoil and Off Grid. And it was sitting there with a bunch of other information regarding magazine articles. He looked at it and said, whoa, that's a guy you got to watch your back with. I didn't make any comment, didn't say a thing. And I was then accused of breaking confidentiality.
Dr. Olson, I think we need to clarify. Either we're going to proceed today or we're going to move this to formal hearing. You state that you want to send this to a judge and to remove it from the board's purview today, but yet you keep trying to make statements and offer evidence.
I want a formal hearing.
Okay.
And I want to be able to depose the accuser.
All right. So, Madam Chairman, I would ask then that the board take a vote and refer this matter to formal hearing before the Office of Administrative Hearings.
And I plan to depose the complainant.
And Dr. Olson,
that's my right.
And just so you know, at the administrative level, the rules of evidence and discovery do not apply. So it's very unlikely that you're going to succeed on your request to depose anyone involved in this matter, particularly
that's why I think okay. Well, all right, so, I may need to go before a judge then.
All right. So that's what I would request, Dr. Davis Wilson, is for the board to take a vote and refer this matter to formal hearing.
And I have been advised that by someone in the Attorney General's office. Thank you.
Go ahead, Dr. Stewart.
Yep. So moved. I move that we vote on Ms. Galpin's recommendation that this be set before a formal hearing.
Just to clarify, it would be a referral to formal hearing at the request of the respondent.
Yes. So modified.
We have a motion and a second. We do need a roll call. Ms. Poe.
Madam Chair, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yes.
Dr. Davey.
Yes.
Dr. Catarino.
Yes.
Mr. Dinar.
Yes.
Dr. Medina.
Yes.
Dr. Meyer.
Yes.
Dr. Stewart.
Yes.
Mr. Nguyen.
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
members of the board, in the event that there are settlement discussions and Dr. Olshan would consent to the voluntary surrender of his license, would that be acceptable to the board?
Yes.
No, I will fight that. That is not Dr. Olshan, possible.
That question was not for you. I'm going to ask the board.
I don't care. If you do that, I'm going to the media.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes this matter. DJ, thank you for joining us today. Board staff will be in contact with you to describe the next steps and dates.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. I believe that we are now on.
That was not told, by the way, as an option. I am really objecting to that. You never said that I would have to do that if I went to the formal board. So you lied. And I don't, because I would not have gone to the formal board if I knew that I'd have to do that, because I've got patients. And what do I tell them? I mean, you folks are doing everything you can to destroy my life. And Dr. I don't Olshan,
if you
why.
Have questions about the proceedings or what happens next, you can reach out to me later this afternoon or on Monday.
Okay, but what does that mean to surrender my license?
Okay, and I can explain that to you, that the surrender is not.
Why did you bring that up? Why did you bring that up,
Dr. Olshan? She is requesting to meet with you outside of this meeting to explain the proceedings. You at this point do not have.
Well, please email me her phone number and her name, and I will be calling you Monday. But I am refusing to, you deceived me. I'm refusing to resign my license.
Jennifer will send
you. I will provide you with.
Goodbye.
I will email it to you momentarily. Thank you.
All right. We will now move to agenda item number 13. I know we skipped around, so I don't think I'm missing anything else. And that will be a request for future agenda items.
Madam Chair, I had heard, I think, Dr. Davey and you mentioned putting something on the agenda for discussion regarding behavior analysts renewing licenses.
Yes, Mr. Diner, thank you. We will add that to the committee agenda and then report our kind of summary and our findings and some recommendations to you guys. So it will definitely come back before the full board for review once we have an opportunity to with Ms. Pakanon. Has been helping us once we have an opportunity to kind of see some of the patterns and have a more thorough look at you know, kind of what's happening, because it's been over the last couple of months. And so we want to look at that. And then we, of course, want to be consistent with how we, you know, are going to address the reinstatement part's one piece, but then we have the unlicensed practice. And so we will work with board staff to kind of untangle that for you guys and present you guys with that information at a later date. Any additional, Dr. Stewart?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I recall that the recommendation from AZPA for a prescriptive authority, that's going to be on a future board agenda as well. Is that okay? Thank you, Ms. Packerman.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Dr. Stewart. So I typically have a standing item while the session is open for to discuss, you know, legislation. This may warrant a separate agenda item because of its significance, but we'll certainly future agendas into 2023 will definitely give you plenty of opportunity to have the discussions you want to have.
Thank you.
Dr. Katarina.
Are we having a committee or to look at previous consequences for board actions Or board actions for previous infractions. I thought we were working on that to make sure that we're consistent, that we're giving the same kind of consequences for similar actions. Do we have something going on like that? You know, I missed a couple of meetings. I might have missed that.
Oh, go ahead, Ms. Pecknum.
Okay. So we do have a committee that was formulated for the purpose of addressing just that, some strategies to ensure there was consistency in disciplinary action. So the committee has met only once, and the it's not active currently because there are a number of other efforts that are also moving forward, an ASPPB meeting or a committee of which I am a member. So they are looking at some developing some tools to present to jurisdictions that would we could consider implementing or modifying for our use. So we're sort of waiting for, you know, more material to emerge. The committee looked at what little there was out there, didn't find it to be particularly compelling or useful. And so we're sort of hoping that some things emerge that we can consider soon.
Thank you.
Any additional items? Dr. Medina?
Yes, I thought we were going to discuss or have input from ASBPB regarding the EPPP2 and a study guide.
Madam Chair, do you want me to speak to that too?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, yes, that is on the January 13th agenda. As it happens, the ASBPB Board of Directors is meeting at this very moment. That's why Dr. Malott isn't with us. And of course, any of the key staff of ASPPB would be attending that meeting. So due to the conflict, we had to push that into January.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions? Or not questions, but topics. All right. Hearing none, we can move into agenda item number 14, and that is for adjournment. It is 10:51. So, Mr. Nguyen, you're only 6 minutes. I'm only 6 minutes late. So, I'll retract my earlier statements. 7 minutes. All right. Do we have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Do we have a second? We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries, and thank you guys so very much for your work today, and happy holidays. Have a good restful kind of winter break, and we will see you in January. Thank you. That was a lie. We will see you before January.